Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the Bullet Wounds and Stretch Marks podcast. I am Ivy, your host, and what I do is I take a conversation between two veterans, I record it, and I present it to you for your utter enjoyment. Oh, I shouldn't have, I know, but I did. Our co-host du jour is Katie Broderick. She's a DC native and Navy veteran, just like me, who chose aircraft structural mechanic and, you know, AM for all of you who care to know that information. And, you know, I'm just wondering if any of you have ever had that friend that you can just go on a Saturday in the barracks, nothing going on, say, hey, I'm bored. Let's go get something on you pierced. You know, that's the kind of friend that she is. Like, that's just what I want to do right now. And they just agree to you to do it. Or in that same vein, that neither of you need to entertain each other at all, but you're just basking in the presence of another person who is a kindred spirit. And that is Katie. She came down or came out from DC to visit for my birthday. We had a blast. She went back home. And now you get to hear our very short little conversation because, of course, we procrastinated through the entire time that she was here until the very last moment where we're like, oh, yeah, we could push out, you know, 30, 45 minutes. So luckily for you, you don't have to hear me rant like you did the last podcast. I did get a lot of really great feedback. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate the support and I really appreciate all the positive stuff, even the negative stuff. I just appreciate, you know, it feels good to be seen or heard, really, in this aspect. I'm sure you guys know that. I'm sure you feel that. But without further ado, I give you Bullet Wounds and Stretch Marks. Enjoy. I hope it does, but at the same time, I'm trying to, like, remove my need for it to be something
other than something for you.
Right. And that's really hard. I don't know if that's a woman thing or if that's just a poor kid thing.
I think it's a I want to be successful thing.
Right. But to what end? Because I've already decided, like, sure, I can be successful in the community that
I want to be publicly successful.
I don't even want to be publicly successful. I want what I do to actually matter.
Impact. Yeah.
And it seems there's this weird zeitgeist in society of unless you're making money.
Yeah.
Unless you are rich and famous from what you're doing and unless you're publicly
acknowledged
or you're in the mainstream media, you're not noticed. Hard.
Of course
it's
hard.
And I sit there and listen to my tangents.
Well, it's hard and you have minimal understanding of what you're doing.
Right.
Which means things are harder. Eventually,
it'll like clockwork.
Right.
Yes. And I keep telling myself that. That's where I get stuck.
Yeah.
And hi, Katie.
Hi, Rachel.
Oh, my goodness. So you flew across the country to come hang out with me for my birthday.
I did.
And I appreciate that.
I appreciate
you.
That's
one of those things, you know, we talk about as veterans. We have, you make a lot of friends, but you only have a few friends, like one or two from each command that you continue to talk to throughout your career.
You only have a few friends left after it's over.
Yes.
Like, there's all the people that you're friends with.
Mm-hmm.
It's very relatable to the restaurant industry that way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Any service.
Yes.
Because it's a service.
Yes.
It's I'm doing this for the betterment of society.
Right.
Whether it's the service industry, like food, food service.
Right. Customer service.
Customer service of any kind.
Those
are the true heroes.
It's very equatable to the service industry. The low wage service industry.
The low wage, absolute refusal of the general public to understand where the population that is clearly doing it for them, but also like out of necessity, homie. Like,
yes.
This isn't my pleasure,
right.
But I have to tell you it's my pleasure.
Right.
I'm paid to tell you it's my pleasure.
Right. I'm going to plaster it on. I'm going to plaster the smile on.
That's why they have regulations in the military saying that you can't talk about your real true feelings and real opinions in uniform, even though that's been...
Which, believe it or not, is very common in the restaurant industry. I work in a restaurant in D.C., or I worked in a restaurant in D.C., and during the 2016 inauguration, it was, you don't have an opinion as far as the guests were concerned. Because you can't.
No. Because then what happens? Well, and not just that it's alienating, that's just the business aspect of it. But when it comes down to brass tacks, it's regulations and rules are placed so that the people in charge don't have to deal with it.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
I don't want to deal with it. So I'm going to make you not let it happen.
Right. So we're going to squish it at your level so I don't have to deal with it at mine.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, chain of command, those things. It's a system. Mm-hmm. It's the same system.
It's anywhere you go. It's why I did well in the Navy is because I had done well in restaurants. I knew how to follow the instructions or at the very least break the rules in a way that didn't make a scene.
Because you have to know the rules first.
Yes, I know
you
exactly where
you have to read the rules.
Right, I know where the rules are, so I know where my limit is and where I'm comfortable getting in trouble for breaking a rule.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which rules I'm comfortable with.
I think that's another thing that finally made me get to the point to where I was like, podcast. Mm-hmm. Podcast is what I need to do.
Yes.
Because I know all the rules mm-hmm. of the environments that I could go into. And I don't like any of them.
No.
And it's not that I don't like rules. I love a rule. Mm. I love a rule.
Me too.
Because you've told me what my limits are. You've mm-hmm. told me what my boundaries are. You've told me how to not get in trouble.
Right, but I can also make the decision to get in trouble if I disagree with your rule.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You've given me freedom here. Mm-hmm. Like, and a lot of people are like, I don't want restrictions. I don't want... Figure it out.
I'm great with restrictions.
I am.
I love it.
I think it's also an only child thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's... I think you and I have always gotten along on a just how our brains operate
Absolutely.
Kind of way because, yes. you know, we were both only children. Mm-hmm. We both have, like, similar, you know, mm-hmm. emotional damage.
Yes.
similar
My
taste.
My trauma is similar
taste
to
in crappy
trauma.
Men.
Yes. Oh, God.
From day one.
As I said, as I tell everybody, I like a project. I like an addicted, underachieving, not treating me right project.
Yes.
Not picky about your addiction.
No.
You pick it.
Yeah. You pick whatever you are going right. To have that's important than, as, more important than me.
As long as it's going to cause me emotional distress and work, that's the one I want.
Yeah, that keeps me busy. Mm-hmm. It keeps me busy. A good project keeps me busy. Because anytime I have a project that I want to do, as we speak
yes.
right now, it's filled with, I don't know.
Thoughts of how it's going to impact the people around you.
All the self-doubt in
yes.
the world.
Oh, yes.
Of, like, nobody needs to hear this.
Yeah, but, like, whether or not they need to hear it doesn't matter. It's I need to make it.
I think it's, for me, and you've known this mm-hmm. for years, Rachel needs to get it out of her head.
Yes.
I don't need you to act on whatever I am saying.
No.
I don't need you to agree with me.
She
I don't
put
freaking
it out
care
there.
If you agree with me.
Right.
I just need to get it out of my noggin, mm-hmm. or it's going to drive me crazy. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't stop it from being in my head.
No.
It's just like that nice little blanket of, oh, this I've already shared this
right.
outside of myself.
Right.
You know?
People
so
have
I don't...
heard this, so I'm good.
Yeah.
We'll move on.
I've said my piece.
To the next thing that lives in my brain.
Yes. I've said my piece. It was immediately, mm-hmm. immediately replaced by something else. Mm. Like, don't think that it lessens the load. By
the joys of anxiety.
Yes. It always works. You just got to work with it. You got to move with the waves. Mm-hmm. Can't go against it. But I saw a lot of, you know, when we left Afghanistan and I saw all of these, you know, all these reporters and they, to the media's credit, they did get a lot of good, honest.
They did.
Veterans. And service members to say their piece.
There's a lot of stuff out there floating around on the internet of people that are kind of like in my shoes on that, where it's like, I have all the emotions about it. Yes.
Right.
Positive, negative. I know people that died in that war. Mm-hmm. I fought in that war. Yet somehow I also feel like
conflict.
20 years in there where we lost thousands of American lives, thousands of civilian Afghan lives, spent billions of dollars, and then decided to just pack it in with 2 weeks' notice and leave billions of dollars of war machines in a country that we've already given billions of dollars of war machines to. It's just, I want to hide in my shirt.
Oh! It's like watching your car go
right.
off a cliff.
Right,
like, I spent money on them.
Never mind the fact that they don't know how to care for the helicopters we've left them, so we've left them war machines that they don't know how to fix.
I mean, they don't have those awesome warranties.
Oh!
They don't have those awesome warranties
no,
that we have.
No, 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 no. The phase crew is not going to fly to Afghanistan and do a D-phase on the Hueys we left there. Correct. That's not going to happen.
I feel like if we left Hueys there, we were just like, yeah, we can't even sell these things. We're going to go ahead and get rid of
it's
them.
It's insane.
Have you ever seen, like,
yeah.
when we went out to sea, the Marines that we had on board had 46s and Hueys. And Ospreys. And I could not look in their nose bubbles. Mm-mm. Because it was just like fod, 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 fod. Do you even clean?
They don't.
Do you even? No. It's like marine maintainers. Fod is a not even an afterthought.
Well, I just thought, you know.
Corrosion control, not even an afterthought.
That explains a lot. Because we had a helicopter pilot at 49, I want to say, who was from the Marines. And he would leave, like, Skittles trash in the cockpit. And it just.
He wanted to taste the rainbow.
There was one time where he got out of the helicopter. They had flown somewhere for some stupid training exercise. This fool gets out of the cockpit of the helicopter with a sandwich on a paper plate. Just where did you get a sandwich? Why was it in my helicopter?
And why is it on a paper plate?
Why didn't you eat it when you were in? I have a million questions, and they all involve, why are you eating in my helicopter?
More importantly, is there a DoorDash in the sky?
Right. Like, did you...
You and I both know that they stopped somewhere and got a sandwich.
I know exactly what they did.
But
they,
still.
Right, but I'm just like... So, you had to turn it off in order to get out and get the sandwich. Who did the... How did we get it back in the air without a maintainer? Explain it to me.
The air crew. Air crew are usually qualified to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. Are they qualified to do dailies? Because they certainly don't come down and help when they... When we have to do them, I'm pretty sure when the ride is over at midnight and we then have to do 3 hours worth of maintenance, the air crew takes their happy asses upstairs, get unpacked, and then goes home. And then the people that have been at work since 3 p.m. get the lovely pleasure of marching 25 pounds of gear out to the flight line to wipe it off for them. So if they know how to do it, why aren't they helping?
It's not their job.
That's not their job to clean up your mess. I'm not your mama.
I had the wonderful... experience of cleaning out a relief tube.
Bravos don't have them, thank Jesus.
Yes. So the relief tube is essentially a funnel with a hot glued plastic tube that goes through the decking of the aircraft and just comes out. There's no filtration system. There's no nothing. It's just a funnel with a tube.
Yes. And to be clear, the word relief is in reference to your bladder. You are relieving your bladder.
Well, instead of relieving their bladders, they would use this as their very own personal dip cup.
Gross.
So.
That is just inappropriate.
So they would use this funnel.
No.
And they would go, okay, I'm going to use this to spit my dip out. So dip is not just spit. It's not just liquid.
No.
It's bits of, you know, tobacco and fiberglass and whatever else those companies put into the dip to make it super enticing to apparently every dude in the military.
And every girl who wants to be cool.
And some women. Yeah. Like, I don't know why, but every time I imagine a female who dips, I just imagine the chick from A School the one that knocked our guys out of the way, and she's like, get out of the way, I'm starving.
Yes.
Like, oh, that's a dipper.
Well,
she's a dipper.
Yes and no. So I had... On my deployment, we had a girl that was right out of A School and got shipped out to the boat, and she dipped in her rack into a Gatorade bottle and would leave it there. She was also the girl who stole my workout towel and used it as her regular towel. The towel that I would put on the deck of the hangar bay and do Taibo on, she used as her regular towel. She also didn't have shower shoes and never locked her rack and would keep trash in her rack. So I took everything out of her rack and took it to her chief.
I hope she's listening right now. She's like, that bitch.
And said, fix it.
I had to do something similar after I found the phantom shitter on cruise. And I was like, while you're addressing this, can we address these females that are sitting on the deck in their skivvies?
No.
And let them know that Lord knows what I've stepped in on the flight line, but I know I don't take my boots off when I come into berthing.
No.
It may be, you know, freezing in here to keep the smell down, but it is, it's not going to kill the germs and bacteria that are hiding on my shoes.
It's disgusting. Did you guys have to safety wire the vents open? We had to safety wire the vents open in the berthing.
No, I got in trouble for taking my rack fan apart and cleaning the 3 inches of dust.
You had a rack fan?
It was like at the foot of the rack. We had the coffin racks.
We did too, but we didn't have a rack fan.
So we had little rack fans that were like maybe 4 inches by like 6 inches, like little tiny rectangular ones that just kind of circulate the air in your rack because you're in a coffin. It's called a coffin locker, not just because you lift it up like a coffin, but because when you slide your happy butt in there, unless you have a top rack with no it's ceiling, coffin. It's a coffin.
Yeah.
You feel very, very trapped.
I was happy to have a small rack or to have a middle rack and not have a lid.
Yeah.
I was. Makes and me feel cozy.
I tried all three different positions. Like, I tried the floor. Didn't like that. It was too low. Tried the middle. I was Goldilocks of the birthing.
Yeah, I get
you
that.
You know? And then I finally settled on one on a top rack, and the girl that slept across from me was, you know, a little Mestec, you know, a child. Mm-hmm. She was a child who had just joined the military, and she was figuring life out, and she was not realizing that there were other people around her in birthing that had different sleep schedules. So one night, or one morning, it was like 11 a.m. and I work, you know, I work the night shift. Yeah. So I go to bed at 7 a.m. boo-boo.
Right.
And so I had warned her a couple of times, and you know I am not the most pleasant person when I've been woken up.
That was an understatement.
I did not realize it was as bad as it was until I saw my child react to how angry I was when I woke up in the morning, and I was like, oh, shit.
We're just a little aggressive in the a.m.
I'm like, why is everybody so scared of me? Then, like, my child looks at me in mortal terror.
Right.
I'm like, oh, that's why.
I'm not afraid of you in the morning. I just like to keep my distance because it's not that I'm worried that you're going to yell at me. It's that I'm worried that I'm going to react and yell back.
It's just going to be a...
Right. We don't need to fight. So you do you and I'll do me quietly over there.
Well, it was the alarm clock that prepped you for that. It was the... When we were in A school, someone had stolen my alarm clock. Rightfully so did I get my alarm clock stolen. I was hazed, guys. Oh,
you were not
me.
Hazed. You were someone
no. That's me saying it sarcastically. Because today, if that happened today, it would be on the news. Like, it's just like these ridiculous situations that all of us have done and all of us live through.
Yeah.
And it taught us all a lesson.
Yes.
But everybody has to act like it's an injustice. And it's like, I'm sorry, what did you expect life to be like?
Yeah. Homegirl got her alarm clock stolen because Homegirl couldn't figure out how to turn her alarm clock off in an appropriate amount of time.
Well,
three or four obnoxious noises.
It was also the fact that I had changed my station to the Mexican Polka station.
Which no one appreciates.
And on purpose.
No one wants to listen to mariachi music.
I know.
At 6:30 in the
morning. That's why I did it. Because I was like, oh, if I make my music something annoying, I'll wake up.
Yeah, everyone will wake up and then you'll get yelled at.
And then I got my alarm clock stolen. And instead of stealing it and hiding it in a community area, they stole it and hid it in the most timid person's wall locker.
Who did we hide it in?
Krieger.
Oh, I forgot she existed. She didn't make much of an impact.
No.
The only thing I remember about Krieger is our chief for maybe first class seeing a picture of her pre-military and telling her she needed to go to the dermatologist.
Oh.
Do you not remember that?
No.
Yeah, Krieger in high school had very clear skin, and Krieger in the military had very not clear skin, and he saw a picture of her that she had, like, out, picked it up and said, "Ooh, we need to make you a dermatology appointment."
Oh! That's harsh.
It is.
I mean, I had a...
She needed a dermatology appointment.
When I cross-rated, I was on a medication that had made me gain a bunch of weight, But, you know, medical was like, well, that medication doesn't cause weight gain
in
people.
What medicine was it again?
It was Prozac.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But here's
the
thing. Those studies that they're referencing are done on
men.
Yes.
Men
do not have the same hormones or body systems as women do.
Do you know that they...
Shock and surprise.
They test, or at least they originally tested all of our birth control on men.
Yes.
To make sure that it doesn't affect the body negatively, except for, oh, wait, they don't have a uterus.
Yeah.
How would we possibly know how it affects a uterus if we're testing on people without a uterus?
adding testosterone to men isn't going to cause any issues? I wonder why. Why is that?
Well, they already have a bunch.
Makes no sense.
Makes no sense.
But no.
I get it.
So, yeah. And then, of course, Krieger is terrified of me because not only is it morning, but it's also morning. I don't have enough time. I didn't have enough time to get my uniform exactly as perfect as it needed to be because I was that person that was like always getting the excellent.
Yes.
Goddamn belt buckle, Kate.
You earned it. It was scratched.
Okay.
Tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Explain to me how I'm wrong.
Okay.
Explain the inaccuracies of my statement.
All right.
25 years later.
That belt buckle, those scratches were very superficial. It was not light.
Correct.
It looked like it had been worn for a day.
You literally just said it. Those scratches were superficial, which acknowledges the fact that the belt buckle was...
less than brand new.
It's close to the word I'm looking for, but let's try it again. That belt buckle was...
less than brand new.
Scratched.
No, it's not happening. I'm not doing it.
Fine, I was so mad. Right?
That's...
I'm comfortable.
I think that... the anger from that does not stem from the fact that it was a belt buckle or any of that BS. It stems from the fact that when you looked around the room,
yes,
out of everybody in that room, the one person who always had their uniform perfect was me.
Yes.
And the reason why is because I am a perfectionist.
Yes, but you know how this works. If you are always perfect and then one day you are slightly less perfect, you are going to get called out more than the person who is
always messed up.
Right.
And it just doesn't make sense to me. That approach has never made sense to me in leadership.
Yeah, but that's life. Like, you are held to the standard that you set. You set the standard of a perfect uniform, and then they held you to that standard. The dirtbags set a standard of dirtbags, and they're held to said dirtbag standard.
See, I don't like that.
I don't like it
because
either.
Because then you're negating the point of a standard.
Certainly. Certainly, but it is...
That's where the theory comes from, is if you're going to hold me to the same standards as other people, just because I always meet your standards...
that's the way it works,
doesn't
though.
Mean you get to treat me horribly if I slightly deviate in comparison to the people around me.
I understand what you're saying.
So infuriating.
It is unfortunately not the way the world works, and that is...
I really did imagine that that one of these episodes would just be me being mad about a belt buckle.
Yeah.
Because that's what being a veteran is.
Yes.
That's our PTSD. Mm-hmm. If you haven't been, like, in a severe combat, this is my PTSD story.
Right.
You can't go to the VA and be like, so there was this belt buckle one time.
Right. Right. Because I don't have any... war stories, like actual war stories. Like, I did not fire a gun at anybody. I didn't do anything
heroic. Stop calling me a hero.
Right.
Stop pushing me into the hero box.
I wore a green turtleneck and a pouch full of tools and stood in a circle around a helicopter and waited for it to take off.
Yes. I did highly dangerous work.
Right. I did highly dangerous work.
Around a bunch of people who were really, really dumb and could have killed me at any moment.
Certainly,
with their stupidity.
But no one shot a gun at me. Not once.
Not a single time.
There was not a single moment where I was worried I would drive over an IED. None of that. I was a little concerned I might get blown off the back of the boat, but that's because I'm stupid and clumsy. Not
every time.
Right. Not because I was in mortal danger of it happening. It's because I struggle to pay attention to my surroundings.
Right.
It was the reason why I was actually quite pleased to have the giant T on the back of my cranium while I was on the flight deck. I'm like, no, please, somebody hold on to me.
Yeah. Cannot be trusted.
Cannot be trusted.
Cannot be
trusted. Will not pay attention. Will end up in the water. Will absolutely have the protein pack around me and the light on my forehead. Flink, flink, flink. Come get me.
I think we were prepping a bird to take off one morning. And I was down in the exhaust area, mm-hmm, on top, mm-hmm, and you know how there's like that like little V, mm-hmm, where those panels kind of come together, mm-hmm, where it just kind of narrows to where they meet, mm-hmm. My float coat line got perfectly wedged, mm-hmm, in that little track,
yep.
And I went to rise up and I just felt a pop and all that anybody around the aircraft heard was fuck.
Yep.
And then I heard everybody goes, what, you know, everybody wants,
yep,
to know what's going on because if they can help,
noises,
and it's the aircraft, we're doing something here, we're group project.
Right.
And I just sit up, just poof,
yep,
poofed up, and then I'm like, now I have to figure out how to get down.
Right, in an exploded
And it's
float
already
coat.
Hard for me to get, I have fallen off of that aircraft so many times.
I fell off of it on cruise.
Yeah, I fell
Cracked
off.
Cracked my ankle.
I don't fall when you expect me to fall. You know this about me, mm-hmm, but I don't fall when you expect me to fall. I fall when nothing's going on.
I fell so I was climbing down and, you know, it was chained and I put my foot on the chain as opposed to on the floor and cracked my ankle.
Of course.
Uh-huh. And then the doctor on the boat thought she saw it, but she wasn't sure, so she didn't want to actually cast it. She wasn't sure it was cracked.
See, I would go the other way.
Right.
Let's cast it just in case.
So she sent the films to Bethesda, who 2 months later confirmed that it was cracked, but it had been so long that it was healed enough. So I was on the flight deck for 2 months, broken ankle.
Mm-hmm. And how many pins? How much hardware do you have in your ankle now?
From that particular, so what ended up happening is that that break weakened the entire structure of my ankle, and I broke it again, I don't know, 6 years ago. I have 2 plates and 11 screws in my left ankle. Mm-hmm. Hurts every day. Yay, military. Yay, military doctors.
Yes. It's so funny when people talk about healthcare. Mm-hmm. I'm changing gears here because that puts us on this point of, I love how everybody talks about socialized healthcare. And then you want to look at them and you say, you realize that there is 3% of this population, active duty and mm-hmm. veteran, is about 3% of this population that the United States government can't figure out how to do healthcare for.
Yeah.
You've got people dying in parking lots. You've got people not getting services. I missed a urology appointment because mm-hmm. my kid's school decided to let out early. Everyday problems for any person. I did not have an opening for urology until January.
Certainly.
4 months later.
Here's the deal. As someone that has been on the, I've been in public health care for a decade. I have ADHD that was diagnosed when I was 28, and I had switched from a stand-up general manager of a restaurant job that kind of manages the ADD on its own to an office job. And in order to get back on my Adderall, I had to make an appointment with behavioral health, and they were on a 7-month waiting list when I called. Luckily, someone canceled and I got in earlier, but it's bad everywhere. And I, as someone who has done, I've had, like, currently I have Anthem, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, I've had Kaiser, which I loved, and I've had military healthcare, and I would take, Kaiser is very much of the military healthcare style, I would take socialized medicine over what I have now every day of the week.
Right.
Every day.
You and I understand that because we've been in this socialized healthcare system. Mm-hmm.
Even with its flaws, and like obviously we would have to, in order to expand it to the other 97% of the population, it would need an entire overhaul.
That's what I'm saying. But is these people who claim they want the socialized healthcare mm-hmm. don't realize what they are asking for.
It's a lot.
And they don't realize that they're not going to be happy with what they're asking for.
I wholeheartedly disagree because I am one of those people that wants socialized healthcare.
Oh, I want it.
I would be happier. I would be willing to take a hit to my coverage to make it so that people don't have to make decisions between getting cancer treatment and paying for their house.
Correct. If anything positive can be said about the active duty military healthcare system is I have seen so many children mm-hmm. dependents of military mm-hmm. personnel. And I know a lot of people who have joined the military because their children were sick. Mm-hmm. Because if you have children who are sick, mm-hmm. the military is the place to be if you want that kind of coverage.
They're going
to
take care of you.
Or you. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a friend who got out who had cancer. Mm-hmm. And she even is like, it's amazing. But when you get into conversations with people who have never been in a socialized healthcare system, their expectations
is different.
Are hugely different.
There are.
But they're sitting there talking about how they want it, they want it, they want it. And you look at them and go, are you willing to make these sacrifices?
Right.
If you are not, that's not going to make you happy.
There's definitely certain sacrifices that need to be made, but also everyone having access to the things that they need to get through life is far more important to me personally than me having exactly the healthcare I want.
Right.
You know, I would rather everyone have access to a physical and the medicine that they need than me having
preventative medicine.
Yes. Like,
then rather have it be a crisis every time they get sick.
Right. Because if you go to the doctor and get your annual physical and talk about your, you know, A1C, and maybe you'll get to keep your feet when you're older.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be nice? Keep your feet, your eyesight.
Or if you do end up getting a chronic illness like diabetes that they know to put you into, you know, cognitive behavioral training mm-hmm. to help you make the lifestyle changes that mm-hmm. you need to make in order to make your quality of life better instead of just going, okay, well, you now have diabetes. Here's your insulin. Don't eat carbs.
Right, right. Here's your scooter.
Yes.
We'll talk about your feet in 6 months when you've consistently eaten what you weren't supposed to.
Yeah. Stay away from sugar, but feel free to eat all the other carbs in the world.
Right.
Like, that's not how that works.
Despite the fact that your body turns every single carb you eat into sugar.
Right, but unless you're a well-educated person who nerds out on things like that, it's not going to work.
Well, not even that. Like, some people that nerd out on that kind of stuff, just like, you, if you weren't raised to know that you don't need to eat all that sugar, you just don't know. Like,
right.
Even if you've done the research, you still, like, that's you need to change the way your entire brain thinks about things. Yeah.
So cognitive behavioral training would be the best approach.
It would be ideal.
Yes, cognitive behavioral training and nutrition training. Same thing with how to resolve issues. It all boils down to education.
It does.
But you also have to have a population who is open to learning and open to applying those changes.
Fair.
And getting people to change their behaviors or their expectations or what they feel is fair is very difficult. You know, especially if they haven't had to make very many sacrifices. And that's why people in the service industry and people in the military, we're going full circle here.
No,
about people in the military and in the service industry find themselves feeling so despondent to the mass media approach to these problems. Because it's like, I hear a whole lot of you guys talking about the problems in ways that are not actually addressing what the real problem is.
Right. You're
addressing the things that can't be fixed.
I feel like in general, what people do is they address the problem in front of them as opposed to the root of the problem.
Yes.
Yes. Because ultimately, in my opinion, the root of the problem is education.
Always.
Mm-hmm. It's people not knowing. And I mean education, like broad strokes education, not just the education you get in elementary school, but the things you learn along the way in life.
Right.
The informal education that you receive just by moving through the day.
The life lessons.
Yes.
The awareness of your place in the world and in respect to the people and your surroundings.
The military taught me a lot about that, though.
Yeah.
Like,
because you're part of something.
You are, and especially, not an individual. Like, I grew up in D.C. I grew up in a very liberal, very open place, which I know sounds surprising, considering that people say D.C. is, you know, it's the swamp, yada, yada, yada. But it is a fairly progressive part of the country.
Right.
You know.
I mean, I would technically call it a swamp. It is vast area that has a lot of different life forms.
It is quite
a lot of different types of life.
It is actually a swamp.
Right.
It is actually, like, physically.
Like
geographically.
Geographically a swamp.
It is a swamp, yes.
That is the environment in which it was built.
Yes. That's why it smells.
It's along a river.
Quite literally.
But anytime it's one of those conversations, especially with, you want these things, but you need to realize that this is what needs to happen in order to make them accomplished. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to have the peace of mind as a parent that my kid isn't going to go into an extreme amount of debt to go to college, that they're going to have health care after my husband gets out of the military.
Right.
That I know that that's something that I'm going to have to face is I'm covered. He'll probably be covered by the VA.
Yeah.
But our kid won't be. So then that's something in the back of my mind that I'm like, okay, a year out, I'm going to have to start shopping.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know, you can't get insurance for just a kid. You have to insure yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, and can you do an add-on with the VA?
You can't. No. So you'll have to get.
You weren't issued your kid.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with couples therapy.
Yeah.
God forbid veterans and service members get couples therapy to help their home life.
I wonder, like, is there a way to, like, work that system since you're a veteran and he's a veteran? Could you get, like, couples individual therapy?
Well, and that's the thing is you can get individual therapy.
Yeah.
But you can't.
Could you convince that doctor to have that individual therapy together?
No, I've tried.
Interesting.
Yes. And that's what I said. Because I was like, you know, yes, research has shown that if one person in a conflicted relationship gets individual therapy, that it does benefit the relationship as a whole because that one person's self-awareness and their ability to process the situation gets better, so then they can help the other person. Mm-hmm. But if the person that's already doing the work to better themselves is having a problem getting the other person to better themselves, then that process isn't going to work.
Doesn't get you anywhere.
And I think that that's also a scapegoat for that healthcare system in billing.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we don't have to do two people.
Yeah.
We just have to do one of you. Yeah. So it is going to be a short episode today because you've got to go back to the airport.
I mean, we can do more on the phone.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
I just like the sound quality.
I can sit in the closet.
Sadie at the door.
Yep.
Mom, why are you in the closet, Mom?
Yeah.
I really appreciate you sitting down with me. We had good conversations.
Always.
And I hope that our listeners kind of got like a few chuckles and laughs out of this, and especially our female veterans. Like, oh, yay, female veterans that aren't talking about the time that they did X, Y, and Z.
No.
We're going to save those stories.
Yes.
Those are our stories.
Those are mine.
I keep those for myself,
not for the general population.
Maybe some other time.
Yes.
Maybe some other time we'll go down the road of, like, what it's really like being a female in the military.
I would love to have that conversation sometime. That sounds great.
All right. So thank you guys for listening, and Talk to you soon. Bye.